Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this Policy and Strategy Committee meeting, and I'd like to call the meeting to order. I would like to acknowledge that we are within Mi'kma'ki, the traditional territory of the Mi'kmaq, and we are able to work here today because of the Treaty of Peace and Friendship that was signed by those who came before us. A little bit of housekeeping this morning. Welcome everyone in our gallery. Just so that you know, the facilities are through those double doors to the left if you need to access them. We also have regrets this morning from Councillor Bell, and I would like to know if there is any acknowledgements, recognitions, or announcements this morning. Mayor has one.
So this morning, I would like to take a moment to acknowledge that April 18th and 19th is the fourth anniversary of the worst mass shooting in Canadian history. There are no words to explain or to try to make any sense out of the tragic event that occurred in Portovich. We are reminded of the sacrifices made every day by those working on the front lines. Our police officers, paramedics, firefighters, hospital staff, 911 call takers, dispatchers, essential service providers, and more. Our gratitude goes out to all of the first responders who bravely responded to these horrifying scenes along with their families. Thank you for continuing to safeguard the people of Nova Scotia. I'd like us to observe a minute of silence now together to remember the 22 people who lost their lives. In this moment, let us hold them in our hearts, cherishing their memories and the impact they've had on their communities. May our collective thoughts serve as a source of comfort to their families and loved ones. Thank you.
Is there anyone here for public input? Wonderful. So we have 15 minutes of public input, and we have two gentlemen that would like to come up. So that time will be split between the two of you of 17 and a half minutes each. I mean, 7.5 minutes each. Sorry. Sorry about that. 7.5 minutes each. And when you come up, could you please state your name and the community that you're from? Even if you've already been here before giving public input, please do at this time state your name and the community that you're from. You can decide who's going to come first. I'm sorry, sir. We do have another announcement, but you can certainly, no, you can just stay in there. Go ahead, sister.
I just want to take a minute, Counselor, to acknowledge that we have a very young member in the audience, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. Please don't worry if she makes noise or talks. It's a great reminder of we're here for the next generation. Please don't be concerned at all. Children are children.
Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Thank you. I'm Wayne Foster. I live in Middle Lehave, beautiful part of the Lehave River. I'm here today representing the Community Fund of Lunenburg County. And I wanted to say a few words in support of the proposal that is before this committee today from the Riverport area and Dr. Mark Langlois. And you will make some decisions on that, I presume, today. The Riverport Group and the Lunenburg County Community Fund share many similarities. We support this effort in Riverport. We support that the intention and the proposal. We have committed funds to it from the Lunenburg County Community Fund. And we share sort of a common vision on the sustainability of small communities in Nova Scotia. It is so important that particularly those communities in rural Nova Scotia have the ability to generate leadership, to generate volunteerism, and to have sustainable communities. We've all seen disasters strike. Employer leaves town, even if it's only a half a dozen workers in a small community, that can cause a lot of consternation. If a fishery plant ceases to operate through disaster or lack of supply, that can have a big effect on the community. So if there is leadership developed in these communities, and if there is volunteerism developed in these communities, then they are able generally to withstand downturns, build their community back up, and prosper. And these are the ideas that we're supporting and that the Riverport Group supports as well. I would encourage you to follow our lead and contribute funds to this worthy endeavor, because we are supporting rural communities in Nova Scotia. So Food Vibes in Riverport is doing a great job, and we look forward to seeing whether or not this effort can be reproducible and translated to other small communities in our area. So I encourage you to consider it carefully and to support that work. Thank you.
It works today. Good morning, Mayor and members of Council. My name's Andrew Himmelman. My family and I live in Newcombville in District 4. I'd like to bring up that modal policy number 1.7.4 states agendas shall be circulated 4 days in advance of the scheduled meeting dates. I request that that policy still is followed, as this week's agenda wasn't released in its normal agenda tab on the website. I'd like to thank Councillor Greek for having a hyperlink that directed me to the agenda package somewhere on the modal website. Last week was my first time speaking publicly, and I'd like to correct something I said last week about HRM lowering their residential tax rate. That piece of data I used was for last year, 2023, and not this coming year, which is actually going up 6.3%. Regardless of what HRM is doing, I strongly believe that modal missed an opportunity to help every family instead of helping just a few hundred. East Hants just announced a 1.2% reduction, and Shelburne are reducing their rates 2 cents residential and 3 cents commercial, respectively. I was quite surprised that with all the points I brought up last week, the communication manager did not follow up. The CAO or deputy CAO has not followed up. The mayor has not followed up, and 80% of the councillors have not reached out. Sometimes silence speaks the truth more than the response. So I have been trying to go back several years, which is a lot harder than what I would have thought, to answer my own questions. And instead of getting answers, of course, I've got even more questions. First thing I'd sort of like to tackle, and the reason why I'm here mostly in the first place that drove me nuts, was this multi-million dollar pickleball project. Is it possible to get the minutes or council agenda from the meeting in where EXP, who I talked about last week, was approved as the engineering company to design this project? And I cannot seem to find a whole lot around how EXP was chosen for the job. Was this a directive from the engineering department? Also, how much money to date has Modal wasted on this curbed pickleball project that has been going, that was going to be placed in center? Has anyone in the finance department tallied up the wasted finances around this failed project? Is that something we could see? I would also like to ask about the purchases of the Volvos that I mentioned last week. On February 22nd of 2022, the council authorized the CAO to procure electric or electric plug-in hybrid vehicles up to $80,000 plus HST each for two vehicles. Now, from that, from the minutes and from the audio, it sounded like we had one vehicle that had an expired MVI, and we ended up purchasing two vehicles. I'd like to be provided the actual cost, or the taxpayers be provided the actual cost of those both vehicles. I'd also like to see where Modal has approved the purchase of the vehicles that are almost twice the cost of what they were replacing. Is there a Modal policy or mandate put in place to purchase strictly electric vehicles? I appreciate that two councillors at the time had some questions during the approval process about buying local, and it was understood that the bulk of these vehicles were located in HRM. Did staff make council aware that maintenance or any repairs were going to be taking place in Halifax and not with our local dealerships? How is this environmentally friendly or cost-effective to purchase and service and maintain them in Halifax? Why has this municipality moved away from purchasing rubber floor, crank windows, AC model vehicles? Is there a new policy surrounding strictly EV vehicles as a requirement, and how is this reached? As with last week, I'll wait for some answers from the manager of communications, and thank you for the chance to raise these concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, both Mr. Foster and Mr. Himmelman, for your remarks and questions this morning. Excuse me. Are there any changes to the agenda?
Thank you, Chair. We'd like to request two added items. I believe the mayor is going to introduce one, and I'll be requesting the second.
So I would like to introduce one in relation to Kingsburg Protected Beach.
Okay, so we'll have that as 11.1.
And I'd like to request as item 11.2 to receive a letter from Minister Masland on the J-Class roads.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other changes to the agenda? Okay. May I have an approval for the agenda as it has been? Thank you very much, Councillor DeLong. Seconded by Councillor Moore. All those in favor? The agenda has been approved. We don't have any minutes at this time to approve and or business, no presentations, and no referrals to council. We're going to move down to 9.1, Administration Department, and 9.1.1, Proposed Neighborhood Nuisance Bylaw, and I'm turning the time over to our CAO, Tom McEwen.
Thank you. So as indicated in the report filed with the agenda package, on October 10th, 2023, council gave direction to staff to present a report to council on a nuisance bylaw. And that came as a result of a number of issues that were brought forward to council by residents in a few areas of the municipality. So the authority for introducing a nuisance bylaw is found in Section 172.1A of the MGA, where council has the general authority to make bylaws respecting the health, well-being, safety, and protection of persons, and at Section 172.1D of the MGA, which provides council with the authority to make bylaws respecting nuisances, activities, and things that, in the opinion of council, may be or create nuisances. So nuisance is not a defined term in the MGA, but it is a legal term, and it's generally defined as interference with the use and enjoyment of land belonging to another. So this can be distinguished from a noise bylaw, which must be noise-based. Nuisance expands that to include noise, smell, and just generally any activity that can interfere with one's quiet enjoyment of their property. This draft bylaw, as written, prohibits people from engaging in activity that unreasonably disturbs the peace of the neighborhood and makes it an offense for any person to engage in an activity that unreasonably disturbs the peace of the neighborhood. Neighborhood is defined to mean the same area or nearby, including but not limited to the area within sight and or sound of the subject property and or activity. In considering whether the peace of the neighborhood has been unreasonably disturbed, the bylaw provides that in a prosecution for a violation of the bylaw, evidence that two or more residents occupying at least two different properties are disturbed by the activity is proof that the activity has unreasonably disturbed the peace of the neighborhood. Now, council will be familiar with a similar term in the dog bylaw, which provides that if a dog is barking, if one person claims that they're disturbed by the barking, then it's presumed that the neighborhood is disturbed by the barking, and that will be an offense. We took some caution here to put two or more residents so that we don't get in a situation where you have one resident and a second resident going tit for tat on complaints. So this requires one activity that disturbs two or more residents occupying two or more properties. And if two or more residents occupying two or more properties are disturbed by the activity, then it's presumed that the neighborhood is disturbed. And the neighborhood are those properties within the vicinity of the subject property, either by sound or sight. So it's not by distance. It's if they're close enough to hear it or close enough to see it. And as council may recall, some of the incidents that were brought to council's attention included loud, offensive, vulgar music, speaking, swearing, even to the point of taking the green bin, filling it with material, and placing it on the property line next to your neighbor's house to send a noxious smell their way. So all of these things would be caught under a nuisance bylaw, provided that two or more residents are disturbed by them. The bylaw provides for a number of exemptions, including disturbances caused by emergency vehicles, as well as business activity, recreation activities, and community events that are taking place in a manner, provided that it's appropriate to the nature of the business enterprise, activity, or event. The draft bylaw defines appropriate to mean being reasonable in the circumstances, taking into account the intensity, frequency, duration, and timing of the activity. And the penalty is any person who's convicted of an offense under the bylaw will be subject to a penalty ranging from $295 for the first offense to $467.50 for a second offense and $812 for a third or subsequent offense, and in default of payment to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 60 days. So this is a scheduled offense under the Summary Proceedings Act, so that's where those fines amounts come from. And the bylaw also provides the opportunity to have it designated under the Summary Offense Ticket Regulations so that a Summary Offense Ticket or an SOT can be issued by the RCMP against the offender, and that provides for the option of automatic conviction, so you don't have to attend in court. If the offender doesn't contest it, then they could pay the fine and there'd be an automatic conviction. The recommendation at this point is to send the draft bylaw to the Police Advisory Board for review by the RCMP for confirmation that this is something that they feel that they could enforce through their actions. We know, because they have told us in the past, that the priority for response would be criminal matters involving human safety, followed by property, followed by municipal bylaws. So this This would be enforceable by the RCMP, or at least that's our understanding, but it would not be a high priority. So they would enforce it, but they would do it according to their own hierarchy of response times and items. The bylaw itself is very similar to a nuisance bylaw that's enforced in Colchester County. So it's something that rural municipalities do have. Council made the decision not to go with a noise bylaw, but with a nuisance bylaw. And so the draft bylaw has been prepared and presented, and if there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them. Oh, I should also point out, this is not first reading of the bylaw. This is an information piece for the purpose of referring it to police advisory for their comment, and then come back to council for further discussion, and then if council so chooses, it would go forward for first reading.
Councillor Greek, do you have any, you have a comment?
Yes, I have comments, and then can I make the motion after I make the comments?
I actually have a question, although I could ask it during the motion, during the middle of the motion, sir.
Okay. So this is something I added to an agenda starting a couple of years ago, actually, in a variety of avenues to try to find a way to help a group of residents in Cornwall area with their ongoing issues with nearby property owners. One of the individuals addressed council during public input at the September 12th council meeting, and there are others here again this morning. I've spent many, many hours conversing with residents from the area, and I know I'm not the only one who has heard from this neighborhood. It is known that someone residing in their neighborhood has negatively affected the lives of many others around them due to ongoing actions on private property. The RCMP have been contacted numerous times over the last several years by multiple people nearby, by multiple nearby property owners. Nothing has been done to help these residents or provide any sense of peace. And it is unpeaceful and unneighborly to have someone in your neighborhood blast Cardi B or similar style music from powerful speakers and then leave their own property for the workday, subjecting the neighborhood to the lyrics and the noise for the entire day. It is uncalled for to have a grown individual shout degrading insults from their property to a neighboring property. There's no need for taunting and bully-like behavior in any of our lives. And I sincerely wish we lived in a place where we didn't have to introduce such bylaws to try to end actions like this by grown adults, but unfortunately, that's not the case. All of our residents deserve to feel unviolated in their own home. I have another example where this bylaw could have helped a neighborhood. Anyone who is familiar with the going-ons in New Germany know a man by the name of Mr. Greg Seelig. And before I go any further, Mr. Seelig is not present with us in chambers today, but I do have his permission to speak of his and his wife's situation. Their story was also widely shared publicly on social media as it was happening, leading to a large number of concerned resident calls to myself and other counselors at this table. Greg had a neighbor who, for a long time, caused a nuisance in their neighborhood. This happened from the individual's private property, and the lives of all the neighbors were disrupted because of the actions of one individual. The RCMP were called by numerous people without providing relief to the neighborhood until there was a physical encounter. A nuisance bylaw in MODL may easily have provided relief to these residents long before the situation escalated to the point it did. In both of these mentioned situations, Cornwall and New Germany, I have received the same question from dozens of residents. Can't the municipality do anything to help these people? What they are living through is not how anyone should be living. If MODL had a nuisance bylaw, the RCMP could issue tickets when they are repeatedly called to the same address for ongoing nuisance behavior. And some individuals may consider a fine of a couple hundred dollars nothing. But if the RCMP are continued to be called a couple times a week to the same address for the same issue, those fines will catch up to them. And I want to make it clear that this proposed nuisance bylaw is not intended to end backyard weddings, celebrations, chickens, chainsaws, or anything along that nature. It is for those who wish to do those things, can do those things, without harassment-like behavior or bullying from their neighbors. This bylaw is to address the individuals who, and to quote the proposed bylaw, engages in behavior that does not demonstrate common courtesy or consideration of others, and causes a frequent or persistent annoyance to the neighborhood. And I end the quote there. The bylaw is to address the people who seem to get their jollies from making the lives of the people around them miserable, and it is to provide the RCMP with a tool to address the ongoing real-life issues like the two examples above. And as I look around, staff, thank you for bringing this nuisance bylaw back to council for consideration. And to my fellow councillors, I want you to put yourself in either of these residents' shoes for a minute, in either of the neighborhoods. What would you want from your municipal government if your neighborhood had a regular nuisance like this? And to the residents of the affected areas, I'm sorry you've been going through what you have been going through for the last several years. I'm sorry that you have lost some good neighbors because of one person's actions. I'm sorry that there are days that your children cannot play outside. And I am sorry that you cannot find peace on your own property. Mostly, as your councillor, I am sorry it took this long to get a possible option for a bylaw to this council for consideration. And I'll make the motion if you're ready or if you want to talk more.
You can certainly make the motion. Okay. Thank you.
To the chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee refer the proposed neighborhood nuisance bylaw to the Police Advisory Board and further request that they provide feedback before the May 14th, 2024 council meeting.
A seconder, seconded by Councillor Wynot. Councillor DeLong, you have a question?
No, just a comment. I'm in strong support of this. I echo everything that my colleague has said. I don't have anything this extreme going on in the district I represent, but I have heard from a number of residents who are supportive of a noise bylaw, but when it was explained to them that that was not feasible, I told them that this was coming to council, and they seem supportive of this, so I'm definitely supporting the motion.
Councillor Vino.
Thank you. I have a few questions and a comment. My first question, perhaps to Tom, with the summary offense tickets, any money collected, where does that go?
It's returned for general revenue.
In our general revenue. Okay, thank you. Does the potential bylaw put a time on the act taking place?
So under the Summary Proceedings Act, the offense can happen within 6 months of the date of the charge.
Okay. That's good to know. I didn't say my question right, but that's good to know as well. So thank you for that. I guess with nuisance, if you're having an event, backyard activity, does it go like 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m.? Yeah. Would there be a timeline in place? Because like Councillor Greek stated, this is not to ruin those who want to have, a get-together, a wedding, a party on a weekend.
Yeah. So the exemption provision provides, for instance, for a community event or a recreation event, provided it's carried out lawfully in a manner that's appropriate to the nature of the event. And appropriate means as being reasonable in the circumstances, taking into account the intensity, frequency, duration, and timing of the activity. So it's fact-dependent on the event and what the RCMP would consider appropriate. Okay. So an 11 a.m. Music event is likely more appropriate than a 3 a.m. music event. So if they have a liquor license, the liquor license has a time when they have to stop serving alcohol. So like a bar, it would have an expected end time. And I know some events have in their contracts times when things must be shut down. So that would all go into the appropriateness of the activity when it's being determined whether it's an offense. But it's not intended to shut down businesses that are lawfully taking place. So, for instance, in MODL, a lot of logging, a lot of forestry. So it's appropriate and reasonable for that work to start early in the morning. That is the nature of the work. But it would be inappropriate if it was happening in the dark, 2 a.m., and you're running a chainsaw, because that would be inappropriate, wouldn't be reasonable in the circumstance.
Okay, thank you. And just one final comment. I will be supporting the motion today because I want to find out what we can hear back from the Police Advisory Board, because I think it's a little out of my purview when it comes to law and enforcement, and I would like to hear what the RCMP have to say about it. And I also want to reach out to my residents and hear from them to see what they might think about this. And I also think it's good to encourage not to use maybe opinion and reasonable, because everybody might have a different opinion on what a nuisance bylaw is. Anything that we put forward, I think, needs to be easily measurable, black and white, as opposed to opinion and what MODL Council might think. So we'll be supporting this because I want to hear back from Police Advisory Board, and we'll make a decision at that time. Thank you.
Mayor Bowover-Getson.
Thank you. And I guess when this first came to us, it was in request to a noise bylaw, and noise bylaw requests started coming to us back in the early 2000s when people in a community felt it was offensive for individuals to use power saws before a certain time of day in the summertime. Anyone that's in the forestry practice knows that they usually in the summertime have to dinner time, and then it's too hot to be in the woods and they had to leave that practice and go on. So it's been here in many different iterations over the years. Other ones were agricultural practices, and under the right to farm, those practices are exempt. And I see that in light of disturbances that may result from a response, operating lawfully in the manner that is appropriate to the nature of the business enterprise. We have also had complaints that have come to us from wedding venues on annual or on weekly basis from areas as well. We have had different issues that have come forward. The timeline was one of the things that I did have in here, and there is no timeline associated with this. I know that I'm not sure if the town of Bridgewater still has theirs, but I believe theirs was 11 o'clock at night or somewhere in that vicinity is what they had as a option. There's, again, different reiterations of this out there. Some of these, the word community events, and I believe that's where we're classifying where a wedding, a family wedding, or an event, a personal event would take place. I think the word community might be an individual, and I'm not sure how, if that fits to that meaning of the word. But I know that we have had this at Police Advisory Committee already, and we had had many staff sergeants and different individual interpretations of what it would mean. And it has come back to us that it's very hard to enforce. And it has come back to us that the municipality doesn't have a nuisance or a noise bylaw, so there's nothing to enforce. But it's been back and forth on this. So at least this way we can, by referring this to the police advisory, hopefully we will get an interpretation that we know if this has any teeth or it doesn't have any teeth moving forward. Keeping in mind that there are only so many police resources, and typically these events happen on a weekend is when they happen, and that's when everything happens, police related. So it wouldn't be high up on the list if there were more serious incidences happening in the municipality at that time. And I know that when we dial the number, we want the police to come instantly, but again, there is a resource, amount of resources that they do have to carry out these duties. But I look forward to hearing what the RCMP has to say in this response to this nuisance bylaw.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Some of the operational issues. So with a noise bylaw, typically the noise bylaw would have a decibel level that if it's exceeded would be an offense. The challenge with enforcement there is that the RCMP have to attend at the time of the event with a decibel reader to determine whether the offense has been committed. And we know that that's problematic from the RCMP's perspective because they can't guarantee a response while the event is ongoing. The benefit of the nuisance bylaw is that the source of the information comes from the neighbors, and it doesn't have to be contemporaneous with the event. So the neighbors could complain while the event is ongoing. The RCMP could show up to 6 months later, take the information, and if they're satisfied an offense has been committed, write a summary offense ticket, without ever having heard the disturbance or the nuisance themselves. So that's just practically one of the elements of the nuisance bylaw and this approach that makes it easier for the RCMP to enforce the particulars. And one of our goals is to get the RCMP to tell us whether this has to be changed or altered to allow them to more effectively enforce it. So that's why it's going to the Police Advisory Board for review and comment.
Councillor Staton, you had a comment?
I'm a little concerned about this, and I know it's an issue in certain areas, but I'm also concerned about doing something that's going to affect, say, if you have a short-term construction project, like I had one in my area that was machinery was starting at 5:30 in the morning, but it was a short period of time, and the complaints are in that they couldn't sleep and, you know, all that good stuff. So I did talk to the gentleman. He agreed to start at 7 o'clock in the morning. So I'm wondering how this bylaw, if the people that complained to me went directly to the RCMP, how would that have been handled? You know, would they go to the gentleman and say, look, can you start later? Or would they just automatically say, you've committed an offense and here's a ticket? So that's my big concern. I'd like to have some comment from the Police Advisory Board how they would handle that situation. I'd also like to have the time more defined as to what, between what hours and what hours, and what the RCMP might suggest is appropriate, because that could be another factor. So I'm looking forward to this coming back with some more definite answers as to what it might look like.
Thank you. Any other questions? Councillor Haysom.
Thank you very much. I'm really pleased that this has come before Council, and I'm also pleased that it's going to the Police Advisory Board. Unfortunately, these incidents aren't limited to District 7 or District 10. They're also not, you know, really frequent. There's one thing to be, you know, disturbed by a late-night party or some construction for a period of time, but I think that this definition of nuisance is a little bit different, and I think that that's an important distinction. So I will be pleased to hear what the Police Advisory Board has to say, but I think that the big issue that we're hearing from our residents is that, and I've certainly heard this, is that there needs to be some method for enforcement or accountability. So I'm very happy that this has come forward.
Thank you. I have a question. I'm wondering why 295 and $467.50 were the prices that were picked. Why weren't they higher? Because I'm thinking that that's not really going to cover court costs if the person is belligerent enough not to pay the bill. So I'm just wondering if it can be higher or why those numbers were picked.
So those numbers come from the Summary Proceeding Act for a Class F offense. So the fine never will cover your court costs if you have to go to trial. So this would be prosecuted by the Public Prosecution Service. And so what the summary offense numbers, they repeat what would be on the summary offense ticket. So if for a first offense, the summary offense tickets would be $295. That, by definition, includes, I think, $100 in court costs. So those are all by statute.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Councillor Vino.
Just one other question, and this might be to go back to the Police Advisory Board. Don't spend a lot of time in court, so I might be naive in not knowing. If somebody challenges the summary offense ticket, does that involve us back in the court, or is that RCMP?
So if the summary offense ticket, you have to take a positive step to challenge it, or you're automatically convicted and subject to the fine. So if you do challenge it, then a court date is set. At the hearing, the people that would have to testify would be the neighbors that complained, and then there would have to be someone to introduce a certified copy of the bylaw. That's often done by consent through the court, but the clerk may have to attend with a certified copy of the bylaw in hand, because provincial court can't take judicial notice of a municipal bylaw.
So I have another question, which would be probably for the Police Advisory Board. What would happen if they just don't pay it? They're not challenging it. They're just not going to pay it.
Yep. So the biggest restriction that someone that doesn't pay a summary offense ticket is they will not renew your license. You will not be able to renew any government-issued permit. So that could it could go beyond a license depending upon what you do. But that's the primary mechanism for the province to enforce a payment of – get a little free criminal law trial practice here. So that's what happens. If you have a summary offense ticket that's not paid, the province has the option of not allowing you to renew your license until it's paid.
Wow. All right. Does anyone else have any other questions or comments? No? So question on the motion has been asked. All those in favor? The motion has been approved. Thank you. We're going to move on to 9.1.2, 2023 staff survey results, and I believe Alex and Sandra are going to be presenting that to us today. Who? And Lynn is also going, Director of HR, will also be joining them as well.
Good morning, Committee Chair and Committee members. As you've heard, we have Lynn, who is our Director of HR, and Sandra Chalice is a co-chair of the Employee Engagement Committee who run the survey. So I'm going to put the slides up, and Sandra is going to start some introductory comments.
Okay, so good morning, and thank you for listening to us. And now you can skip on to the next slide. So the primary role of the Employee Engagement Committee is to produce the annual staff survey, and the results guide the committee's actions. This is the third year of the survey, and it included many of the same questions as the first year, which helps us track changes year on year. The whole purpose of the survey is to find out what staff feel it is like to work for Modal and to show where the organisation's strengths and weaknesses are. Next one. And before we get into the survey details, I'd just like to explain a little how the responses are scored. A scaling number is given to each response option. These are totaled, and then an average is determined for each question. The overall maximum average that could be achieved to a question is 5, meaning that every respondent strongly agreed with every statement, but I'm not sure that employer actually exists. We should be very pleased when we see an average rating in the high 3s or 4s, meaning that more people responded agree or strongly agree to the questions.
So, excuse me, I'm going to delve into the results. As Sandra has mentioned, we maintain consistent questions to allow some comparisons over time. So this year we had 46 employees respond to the survey. Each question is a positive statement about the workplace. For example, I feel respected by my colleagues. And then employees are asked to rate whether they strongly agree, neutral, disagree, or strongly disagree. So we can see there is a slight reduction in average scores from 2022. We still have significant improvement over the first year that we ran this version of the survey, which was 2021, which if you recall, there was a lot of change going on in our organization and globally. We were still in the midst of periodic lockdowns. We had just moved. We had some significant reorganization in terms of our corporate services section. So there was a lot of change going on, and so that was reflected in the survey results. So we were happy to see that improvement in the subsequent 2 years. The other point is that whereas in that 2021 year, we did have some results where we got below an average of 3, so there were some disagree on average in the staff. That is not the case for 2022 or 2023. We added a couple of new questions. The Employee Engagement Committee recommended putting these on. So I'm going to just go over those in a little more detail. And I thought they were also helpful to help illustrate what the scores actually look like in the response. So you can see an average score of 3.6 for this statement. I receive sufficient recognition or praise for doing good work. So the committee was interested in trying to understand if employees feel recognized when they do a good job. So on average, we got a 3.6. So that's in between the neutral and agree on average. And you can see the distribution of those. So on the y-axis, you have the number of responses. So there is below 5 in the strongly disagree, below 5 in the disagree categories, below 10 in the neutral, over 25 in the agree, and then 5 exactly in the strongly agree side. So that results in a score that's averages out to about agree. So it's generally a positive score for us, indicating that employees generally feel like they're receiving recognition for the job that they're doing. A similar type question, I feel respected by the organization as a whole, and you see a similar distribution pattern. Again, 3.6 was your average score. A couple in the strongly disagree categories. Most of your employees are answering, yes, I agree with this statement. So you have over 25 of them responding agree, and just over 5 strongly agree. In terms of where we're doing the best, according to our own employees, we have, three scored above a 4. So this is indicating strong agreement for this statement. Number one, I enjoy my job, which is really a wonderful thing to see. It's a high score, particularly when considering, work environments and comparison with other organizations. Again, I feel proud to work for MODL, 4.1, another very high score and a wonderful sign. Leadership taken from council and from your management in terms of trying to instill a sense of pride in the community service, a public service that we provide. And I feel respected by my team, also scoring above a 4. The areas where it was lowest in 2023, bearing in mind, and I have some graphs to illustrate a little more, but these are 3.3 to 3.4. So we still have the majority of staff agreeing with this statement. However, we would like to see these scores higher. So we're talking about a culture of teamwork and cooperation. We have rules are followed. So a good example of this would be inconsistent application of the personnel policy between departments is a key area where this is coming up. SMT communicating vision. So SMT stands for a strategic management team. And so there's a feeling that we could do a better job in terms of communicating what our vision is for that public service. And then communication in MODL. And HR professionals will tell you this is consistently an issue in organizations across industry. Trying to get everybody to believe you're getting good communication is difficult. We see strong scores within department, and then it decreases as you look at scores for the organization as a whole. So again, this graph here is showing the score for MODL has a culture of teamwork and cooperation for all 3 years where we asked this question. So I just wanted to highlight something for you. Again, you see the bulk of the responses are coming in the agree section. In 2021, you see tall blue bars on the left side of the graph. So we had 15% of employees strongly disagreeing that we have a culture of teamwork and cooperation. Again, this is the point where staff are on lockdown. We don't have great communication because we're not seeing each other every day. We had gone through the move, some changes in job descriptions. And then you look over on the far end, there's no blue on the strongly agree. So no staff feel like there's a strong culture of teamwork and cooperation in 2021. In 2022 and 2023, you can see that those scores have shifted. So you see a big drop in the strongly disagree category. You have people saying strongly agree. And your highest values in 2022 and 2023 are in the agree state. Agree section as opposed to the disagree section in 2021. Similar trend happening here, employees are satisfied with the communication within the organization. So you do have over 10% strongly disagreeing in 2021. And then in 2022 and 2023, you have people in the strongly agree category, and the bulk of your responses are now in the agree section. So your overall score is 3.3 for this year, which shows your improvement over 2021. And then the final slide in your presentation is a summary, so you can see those scores. Again, we color-coded them when we presented them to staff, so you can see where we were having those on-average disagree statements, the red ones on the left. And then in 2022, between 2021 and 2022, we invested significant effort improving particularly communication. So we re-implemented the weekly updates that had happened early in COVID. We had regular all-staff updates. For example, the day after the budget passed, we updated all staff on the budget. We've improved communication amongst the SMT and the director's table and ensured regular department meetings so that that information is filtering down. And you can see that in those communication scores where we have some high scores and strong agreement in the 2022 and 2023. So this was a presentation for information purposes, but I'd be very happy to answer any questions if councillors have them at this time.
Councillor Dillon.
Thank you. Thank you for this report. Is there any distinction made between respondents from different departments, or is it all just put in one big pool?
No, we don't track. In fact, we to try and get the best quality responses, provide assurances to staff that the answers are anonymized. So nobody on staff has access to who provided those comments, and we don't collect any descriptor data. So we just know X number of people responded, and then these are the scores that came out. Yeah.
Councilor Hubley?
Quick question. Did 46 surveys cover 100% of the staff?
No. The surveys went out to just over 60 emails at the time. So our staff complement varies, particularly according to, like, summer is a peak where we have more recreation, employment, those kinds of things. But at the time of the survey, I checked with our payroll staff. We were just over 60 emails that the survey was provided to. And just in relation to that, I don't have the figures in front of me, but there was a slight reduction in the number of responses, although I don't think it was a significant percentage change.
We had 49 in 2022.
There was 49 responses in 2022. So a marginal reduction in the number. If we continue to see a trend in reducing the responses, that would be an issue that the EEC would like to investigate. But for now, it looks just like...
Any other questions? Mayor Bolivar-Getson.
Thank you. And in relation, was there a cross-section departmentally? Did we have some, it wasn't a department that didn't respond with those 12. Do we have a way of knowing that?
No, we can't confirm because we make sure the information's anonymous, although with a response rate that high, with the exception of one very small department, it's highly unlikely that there were no responses from any department. So I feel fairly confident that it does represent a good cross-section of our staff, but I can't tell you percentages per department.
And I personally, I was disappointed to see a small decrease in the employee satisfaction survey. Looking at it year over year from 2022 to 2023. I'm not sure if there was significant events that were happening at the time or whatever, but again, I would definitely like to see those increase.
Thank you for the comment. I think that you've hit one of the nails right on the head. Surveys are affected by point in time, so we do them each year. In 2021, we did it within a month of moving. So there was a high level of change and challenges for staff. And that was reflected in the scores. Between 2021 and 2022, we implemented a number of new communication measures. So those were fresh on the minds of staff. So it's possible that the 2023 scores being slightly lower than 2022 reflect particular instances that may have occurred close to the survey time, and the communication measures that we'd put in to get that improvement from 2021 to 2022 are considered routine now rather than, oh, this is new efforts put towards this. So we'll look again for 2024. Do we see, again, a sort of stable score? Are we seeing, if there's a continued decline, that would point to a level of concern that we aren't doing enough around communication or job satisfaction.
Councillor Stanton.
Thank you, Wendy. Just a couple questions for you, if I might, to Alex. I assume this survey or study was not done in-house. Someone from outside the municipality questioned employees about their satisfaction level. I'm assuming that.
No, the survey was developed based on research for engagement and satisfaction surveys across a number of different industries, but we didn't feel it was value for money to hire external consultants. In order to ensure that the data is anonymized, we used a third-party website to collect the data. So it wasn't handwritten surveys handed in. It was you log in with a password, input your information into a website, and then that's anonymized by the third party and provided to us in aggregate.
Okay, thank you. And there's a lot of, in the middle, neutral, like it was almost equal, the people who were neutral. So what does that mean as a director? What does that mean to the directors when they're asking, or when the employees have, they're neutral about what you're asking? What do you take from that, I guess, is what I'm asking.
What I would, in my situation, at least where as a director looking at the results, I'm interested in where the majority of staff landing. And so I think when you see an average score, for example, of 3.6, that's actually showing the majority of staff are responding as they agree, just because of the way random or normal distribution of results works. Where there's a large number of neutrals on a particular question, it could indicate that they don't feel very strongly about it, or it could indicate they're not certain because they see examples, for example, on both sides of good communication or bad communication. So one of the approach the Employee Engagement Committee takes for this is last year, for example, we held a follow-up World Cafe where employees were invited to provide tabletop discussions to provide more context and explanation for where communication might be improved or where we might do a better job, for example, communicating vision. And then in terms of how directors respond, something that we've implemented recently is at the director's table where we have, for example, less common situations arising in terms of the application of the personnel policy. Those are now discussed as a group to ensure that we are providing that consistent application across departments. So I would say where we have results that are either there's some ambiguity or we would like to see improvement, we target efforts to try and address those specifically, and we try to get context and more data-rich information by interviewing staff about those.
Thank you, Alex.
Does anyone else have any comments or thoughts on this subject? No? Well, thank you very much for thank you for being here. You didn't have an opportunity to talk at all. You got but thank you very much. We're going to move on to our recreation department in 9.2.1, Food Vibes Report, funding and partnership request, and I believe our Director of Recreation, Trudy, is going to lead us in this discussion.
right. Good morning, Deputy Mayor, Mayor, and Councillors. This morning, I'm going to be presenting the staff report in response to a presentation that was delivered by Dr. Mark Langlois, I think on March the 5th. And I decided to put a PowerPoint together because I do recognize that when the presentation was being given, the internet connection wasn't the greatest, and so I know it was difficult for councillors to hear. So I do have quite a detailed report, but I thought that I'd put a PowerPoint and just raise again some of the points that was raised in that presentation by Food Vibes, and to capture some of the things that they have been doing since they've incorporated as a nonprofit group in 2017. What some of their future goals are, and try to address the question why MODL may want to partner with the pilot project that was proposed at that presentation. So I just wanted to recap what the request was that day by Food Vibes, and they are looking, it was a two-prong request, so they were looking at MODL to partner on the pilot project to support volunteers, and to evaluate the project to determine success areas and areas requiring improvement. So when the presentation was delivered, Mark had indicated that this was a pilot. He wanted to, it was based on research, evidence-based, wanted to evaluate it, and part of that partnership would be for the municipality to be included and that we would get the results of that evaluation and get the results of that research that was being conducted. And the long-term intent was perhaps that this model could be replicated in other communities within the municipality of the District of Lunenburg. They also had a financial request for the Municipality District of Lunenburg to provide $17,900 in financial assistance to assist with this pilot, specifically to help fund a part-time volunteer support manager for 8 hours a week for 8 months and to fund a partnership and evaluation manager for 12 hours a week for 8 months. So who is Food Vibes? And I know that Dr. Mark Langlois is here in the crowd today. So if I say anything out of term, hopefully he'll correct me. And if there's any particular questions, if council wishes to address him, perhaps he can address them better than I can. But I'm going to try my best based on my conversations with him and the presentation that was made on March the 5th. So Food Vibes became a nonprofit organization in 2017. And in just talking with the founder, Dr. Langlois, he had worked in the community development field for most of his life, 40-plus years experience. For those sitting around the table, you may remember a nonprofit organization that he also founded as well, that supported youth in the community and leadership development. He went on to continue his PhD in community development, was a social entrepreneur. He's done a number of things around the community development field. So when he retired, when he came back to Riverport, the community that he was originally from, he still had the passion around volunteerism and saw some need for support to volunteer groups, and I believe hence came Food Vibes. So that's been an established nonprofit group since 2017. It was based on experience and research as an evidence-based approach to effective community development. Really what Food Vibes is all about is gathering individual residents and representatives of local community groups around to connect, inspire, and organize projects together. And I know that's something that we try to do in our own community development model here with the Recreation Department and in the Municipality of the District of Lunenburg. We certainly try to connect and inspire and organize community groups as well. Food Vibes provides services like coaching volunteers or coaching leaders within the organizations. They share their resources. They help create social media. They do evaluation. They help facilitate. They also help with grant applications. So very similar things that you'll see the alignment with our own community development model. And the last bullet is really they provide any support that volunteers are looking for. So over the last 20 months, with a minimal budget, these are some of the things that Food Vibes has been able to accomplish. They've conducted a 12 months of mapping and learning about the local community activity and leadership. So they've taken the time to meet with community groups, local leaders, find out what's happening in the area. They've done that mapping. They have supported 4 board chairpersons during some organizational transitions. They've recruited 5 new board and advisory members for community organizations. They've coached and supported 5 residents to launch new community projects. And they assisted in repurposing 3 public spaces at the Riverport Community Center. So I know that there's a new group that is utilizing one of the spaces at the Riverport Community Center, and another organization has changed spaces, which was more accessible to them and better use for them. They've conducted 35 new volunteer engagements. They've held 9 community group meetings. They've brought people together to share a collective agenda. They initiated a growing public use of the commercial kitchen at the Riverport Community Center. They have published 10 short videos to celebrate local volunteerism. And they launched a community pantry at the community center. And they're soon to include a new food bank service. And they curated a conservation-oriented art show with locally produced art, and they provided free food service at 12 community events. And I should back up a little bit. It's not in the in my PowerPoints, but Food Vibes, and I suspect the reason for the name Food Vibes is they believe that food brings people together. As we all know, if we go to those family gatherings, it's often around food. And around this gathering of food, that is where the connections and the inspiration and the ideas and the creativity comes from. So that's part of their core value, hence Food Vibes. So some of their goals, so that talked about what they've accomplished in the last 20 months, and so some of their future goals for 2024 is they're looking, and I believe they have started this, to host a weekly drop-in day at the Riverport Community Center, and again, to gather around food, to provide a welcoming space, and to provide practical time to provide support to volunteers. They would like to provide volunteer management for 5 community groups in the Riverport area, provide support for new resident-led initiatives. And as you had as I had indicated in the past 20 months, they've done some of that already. And they want to share valuable lessons learned with their sponsors, who I believe spoke, one of those sponsors spoke at the public input, and their partners, and which the part of the ask was for us to be a partner, which would include us. So they would share that research and share that information with us. And at the end of the day, they'd like to establish community collective goals so that communities groups are working together, not that they don't maintain their own individual identity or continue to provide the services that they provide, but they do it in a more collective way and utilizing resources more effectively. And so 2 of the other goals is to establish financial security for Food Vibes, backbone services for the Riverport area. And I have talked to Mark about this, and the intent is not long-term grants. He's looking at a different type of sustainability. And animate the community center with resident-led activity. So really to make the Riverport Community Center the hub and to support the other volunteer groups and community groups that's in that area. So some of the funding partners that they have secured to date, the founders has invested $40,000 since 2017. To date, at least as to the point when I put the PowerPoint together, individual donors have invested $52,000, and the Lunenburg County Community Fund has contributed $5,400. And they have contributed 2,700 plus hours, volunteer hours, since 2021. So the financial request in the works, so it's not just the municipality they're looking at partnering with or seeking financial support. They've been in communication with the Royal Communities Foundation of Nova Scotia, Volunteer Canada, and they continue to seek individual donations. So the question today, why should the municipality district of Lunenburg consider partnering with Food Vibes? And so in talking with Mark and reviewing the PowerPoint and understanding a little bit more about Food Vibes, their core values do align with MODL's vision and mission. Their core values are inclusivity, nourishing communities, sustainable environment, their people-centric approach, which definitely the community development model that we practice here in MODL, particularly in the rec department, is people-centric approach. Often things don't get done in communities without volunteers and those people, and the power of collaboration. So when I was looking at their core values, I thought it spoke as part of our strategic plan that we are wise financial managers. We, too, are strategic planners. We're sustainable community builders and collaborative engagers. And that's really what Food Vibes is asking us to be, is sustainable community builders, strategic planners, and collaborative engagers. They have an experienced board. If anybody hasn't went to their website, I would encourage you to go visit. The wealth of knowledge is amazing. And the pilot is based on research and evidence, as I indicated before, so that's one of the reasons why we should partner. I believe we should partner. And the expected turn on investment. So this pilot project is anticipating that there's going to be more community connections. It's going to increase volunteerism. Which is interesting, we have our volunteer recognition ceremony tonight. We're recognizing volunteers, all that they do in the community. I strongly believe that volunteers are the heart of the community and the backbone of our communities and does make them vibrant, sustainable communities. We also heard the statistic when Sandra came in and spoke about Project Volunteer, that since COVID, the province of Nova Scotia has lost around 37,000 volunteers. They haven't come back to volunteerism. I didn't put this in my slide, but in my report I referenced Dr. Coleman, and I know it was an old report in 2000, but it's always stuck with me that if the gross domestic product was in the state that volunteerism is in, we would be announcing a crisis in our country. And I don't have those, I can only go based on the 37,000 that hasn't come back. I would say that volunteerism is getting to that state again. People aren't going back to volunteerism, or we're not seeing as many people volunteer. And that's part of this pilot, is to try to increase that and also to decrease social isolation, because volunteerism does provide that opportunity for people to get out, to connect, to inspire, and decreases that social isolation, and to increase food security and food literacy. And the other reasons for the return on investment, so why we should partner, is they are really looking at a collective community vision building through this pilot, again, which could be replicated. They are looking at new resident-led community enterprises, which creates more activity, more life, more projects, more sustainability in communities, and looking at increasing the activity at the Riverport Community Center to make that a viable building to be used more than it is currently. And I do know that there's lots of things happening in Riverport, because I just know of other projects that's happening in Riverport, connecting with other volunteers and community groups in that area. Why partner with Food Vibes again? It does follow a community development model, and I strongly, personally, and professionally believe in the community development model. They've had strong results to date, is evidence in the 20 months of what they've accomplished. And I also feel it aligns well with our Project Volunteer. When Sandra came and made a presentation, she had named the top 3 to 5 things that volunteers were looking for, and they were looking for volunteer recruitment, they were looking for funding, more training around inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility, and overall volunteer support. And this is what this pilot project is about, supporting the volunteers so they can continue to do the good work that they do. So I did reach out and ask for some testimonials when I was putting my report together, and there's a number of testimonials in the report. I just put 3 up on the slide. So the first one is from Kevin Creaser. He's a local resident and community organizer, and he stated, "It's a pleasure working with you, Mark. I'm excited about the dance we are organizing. I can really feel the energy. Your support has made a lot of difference for me. And then the second one comes from the chairperson of the Lunenburg County Community Fund, Elspeth McLean Weil. She stated, "We see some important elements of this work that might help inform our work developing leaders and fostering the volunteer sector." And then the last one that I put on this slide is from the former past chair of the Riverport Community Center. You know, Gabe stated that Food Vives has been a catalyst for change in how we think about volunteering and community-wide cooperation and organization. And I do think that volunteerism does need a catalyst for change. I don't know if the traditional way is working, so we do have to think a little bit outside the box and think how we can utilize the volunteers. Because as the National Volunteer Week's theme is, every moment matters, and so we need to make every moment matter when it comes to our volunteers. So the staff recommendation, I know this was a long-winded presentation, but I really wanted to recap because I know that the internet connection was difficult. The staff recommendation is for the Policy and Strategy Committee to consider recommending to Council to approve $5,000 from the Annual Operating Grant Fund and $5,000 from the Recreation and Parks Tourism Operating Budget to financially support and collaborate the Food Vives Riverport on an innovative pilot project aimed to enhance community leadership, volunteerism, and social innovation. I know that the request was for $17,900, and when Mark came and presented, it was March the 5th, and I was very conscious of the budget. So the reason why I'm recommending $10,000, in case folks ask, is I felt that it could fit within the budget, and that wouldn't have to ask for additional funding outside the budget. And then I'll just leave with some final thoughts. To quote Dr. Mark Langlois, we believe that building stronger community connections and volunteer spirit is the wisest investment to catalyzing a vibrant, sustainable future. And as I've already alluded, the theme for National Volunteer Week is Every Moment Matters. And the theme really highlights the importance of every volunteer and each contribution they make at a moment when we need support more than ever. And again, in my report, you know, Dr. Langlois, you know, alludes that, and I believe that everybody does have gifts that they can contribute. They just might not recognize the gifts, so they might need to be inspired to recognize the gifts. And so each time somebody gives the gift of volunteering, every moment matters. Any questions?
Do we have Councillor Haysom?
Thank you. Thanks for this. I wasn't here on March 5th, so I really appreciate getting the overview. I know that Mark is someone who's fostered leadership and community building and volunteerism for a long time. I participated in youth leadership training with Mark longer ago than probably either of us would like to comment on. But I think that we probably couldn't have a better resource for enhancing volunteerism in our community. So I'm really, really pleased to see this come forward. Thank you.
Councillor DeLong.
Thank you. I really feel that our community fabric has been fraying a lot, particularly during the pandemic, and I think that volunteers are those that weave the community fabric back together. So I'm also happy to see this come here. My question, I guess, is this a one-time ask or will this be a yearly ask?
My understanding is that this was a one-time ask. They are looking at other partners. Now, whether they'll apply under a grant, this is what I kind of made the recommendation. I did make the recommendation that splits half grant and half out of our operating budget because some of it is to help with operating cost. And the reason for the $5,000 from our regular budget is around that partnership piece and the evaluation piece, which I think is important, as it can be possibly replicated in other communities. Yeah. So I don't want to answer on behalf, but my understanding is that this is a pilot. This is to help fund that.
Yeah, given that it is a pilot program, that's my understanding too.
I can't go.
You can't go. Right. Anyway, no, I'm happy to see this here. Thank you.
Councillor Vino.
Thank you. My questions that I had before the presentation centered around other sources of funding and past and present projects, but you've identified all of those in your slides. So my one comment, I guess, is in one of the slides you said that the group hoped to share the valuable lesson learned with potential partners, and if it is approved today, I'd love to see them come back in a year and tell us all about everything that has been done. And my only complaint is it's not in my district or in more districts. Maybe it'll take off and it will expand, because I think it's a great opportunity for the Riverport and surrounding communities.
Council Hubley.
Thank you for the presentation, because there were a lot of points missed in the original presentation. I think this is absolutely awesome. I do have one question, a particular question about the drop-ins. I want to know, are these open for anyone? Like, can you live in any community and go to these weekly drop-ins, or is it totally focused only on Riverport?
Thanks for the question. Can
Mark address that question?
Kenny, thank you.
And thanks for using Mark.
Could you really introduce yourself, just for the record?
Mark,
thank you.
Yes, it's Dr. Mark, but I don't use that very often, Mark Langlois. The answer to the question is we're experimenting along the way. It was open to the general public, and it was growing. So we're using it particularly for volunteers, so volunteers recognize it as a place to come. But there's a number of people that have dropped in asking questions, what are you up to? Come and have some bread and soup, and we'll chat, and they'll see it versus talking about it.
Excellent.
Which is a more efficient way to do it.
That answers my question. Thank you.
Councillor Stanton.
Thank you. Question to Trudy. The title says Food Vibes, which is a little disconcerting because I thought it was surrounding food, but it looks like it's about volunteerism and leadership, community leadership. So I'm assuming this money is going to pay someone to do some surveying or some research or to lead volunteers as opposed to providing food?
So the request at the beginning was to help support two part-time positions. One was a volunteer support, 8 hours a week for 8 months, and the other was around the evaluation piece. For the pilot to be evaluated. So yes, it is all around volunteer support, not around purchasing food.
Thanks for the clarification.
Councillor Wynott.
I want to thank you, Trudy, for all the work you've done in this. If you think setting hair when the page goes off and I'm not going is not easy. Driving me crazy. Anyway, Riverport is an up-and-growing community. I mean, it's really, since the fire in 82, it went downhill big time, and now they're on the way back. There's over 40 children in the area now, and the residents there are very strong and looking towards the future in a real good manner, and they're really, really doing good work. And I don't put as much time down there as I should because it's a big area, but as you know, I'm a volunteer myself, and I can only say that this is a great organization.
Mayor Bolivar-Getson.
Thank you, and I guess it's no better time to come forward for an ask for volunteerism than during Volunteer Week. So it's definitely very timely to have that. Looking at the proposal and the leadership qualities that you're looking for and trying to build within communities, I think is something that every community out there is trying to do right now. With the decline in volunteerism, since COVID, but we knew it was coming even with the baby boomers going through the system and the lack of younger people being involved, if this in any way can build that a model that can be implemented throughout the municipality, it's definitely something that's worthy of moving forward with. And you're absolutely correct when you say Food Vibes. If you want to get people out to a meeting or get people out to something, that it's usually focused in Lunenburg County around food of some sort. So thank you, Mark, for your leadership on this. And, yes, we look forward to seeing the end results to it.
I do have a comment and question. I do echo my colleagues' sentiments that this is a wonderful project. I do have a question, though. When you were creating your budget for 24-25, the money that you suggested above the grant money, the $5,000, to allocate to Food Vibes, what was it planned for? And will you be able to continue to do those things, even giving the $5,000? Or will you need to come back throughout the year to ask for more money to cover those things that money was originally for?
Okay, so the intent, he did originally ask for $17,900, so I'm recommending $10,000 for this pilot project. And this is to help fund those two part-time positions in the original ask, and I've already indicated to Dr. Langlois, which I'm sure he can source funding just as great as I can. Oh, I shouldn't say that. That's bragging, isn't it? Just as he has access to grant information as much as I do, but I certainly would help him source any funding that he might need to help leverage that other $7,900 that he needs to make this 8-month pilot happen. I know that he's been in conversations with Volunteer Canada and other organizations that he's in discussion with around this project. So hopefully some funding will come that way. So to answer, long way to answer your question is no, we don't need to come back for more than the $10,000. The recommendation is the $10,000.
Thank you. Councillor Wynott, would you be able to bring forth this motion, please?
To the chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommend that Municipal Council approves $5,000 from the Annual Operating Grant Fund and $5,000 from the Recreation, Parks, and Tourism Operating Budget to financially support and collaborate with Food Vibes Riverport on an innovative pilot project aimed to enhance community leadership, volunteerism, and social innovation. And I so move.
Seconded by Councillor Vino. And Councillor Vino, do you have a question? No, on the motion? Okay. Any questions on the motion? Questions been called for. All those in favor? The motion's been approved. Thank you very much. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and we will come back in 10 minutes.